Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel and Kim, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com. On today's Tour Catch-Up,
Felix Auger-Aliassime completes a tour title hat-trick.
The United Cup becomes official.
And the WTA Finals get underway in Fort Worth.
Kim, Chris, today is the 31st of October and we are here to catch up on the week in tennis at Tennis Weekly HQ. We have had a week off on the WTA tours, but we've had two big events on the ATP circuit in Vienna and Basel. We have had Felix Auger-Aliassime complete a hat-trick of titles in the last 3 weeks. And we've also had the man, the myth, the octopus, Daniil Medvedev, or should I say Dadvedev, because he's just recently become a dad, win as well. So all good there. And we've also got the WTA Finals in Fort Worth about to kick off over the pond in the United States. So lots to talk about. The United Cup as well, becoming official for the start of next season. And I'm happy to tell our listeners that Kim is back. Kim, you do not have any more travel issues. I was relieved to hear coming into this evening you're not basically stuck in Swindon like you were last week.
No, I'm not. I mean, Swindon is a lovely place, but I was,
is it?
I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
I was in the outskirts of Swindon.
Oh,
okay.
It gets better.
Yeah. But I had dinner by the National Trust headquarters, and if any British people are listening, you know the National Trust are quite big. I'm a member. I like a bit of National Trust.
It's a humble brag.
Yeah. So I care about, you know, preserving our heritage. Anyway, this is not a heritage podcast. This is about tennis. So let's move on quickly before I digress too much. What's your highlight of the past week, guys? Before we crack on with the movers and shakers, what's floated your boat in the last week?
Well, I'm going to go first, and I'm going to say in the absence of WTA action, I've still found a women's tennis highlight, and mine comes from, I've dropped down to the challenger, the ITF level. It comes from Tyler in Texas, where one of my favourites, Taylor Townsend, won her way through to the title at the W80 tournament there. And she didn't drop a set, which was something super nice. She beat some of the podcast favourites of Kai Kanepi and Storm Sanders on the way. She's back in the top 130. And then a fun fact about this is that she won her quarterfinal, semifinal and final all in 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
So that is a good effort.
That's pretty unique, isn't it?
Three matches
in a day. That doesn't happen too often. Was that because of rain delay, out of interest?
Unfortunately, it was because of some weather issues. But nothing can, nothing can weather the storm, but that's a bad Storm Sanders joke. Nothing can weather the storm that was Taylor Townsend.
There's a tongue twister there. Taylor Townsend, Tyler, Texas.
Ooh, a lot of T's going on. Texas T's,
I broke it up. In fact, interestingly, all of the players I mentioned, their first and second names are the same. Taylor Townsend, Kai Kanepi, Storm Sanders. Yes.
Now, Joel did an English degree. Is that alliteration? Or
I believe
something else?
I believe so. I believe
Joel has a degree? No.
That is a form of alliteration. Yes, my linguistics degree can confirm that. But
fantastic.
Great for Taylor Townsend, because there were no tournaments on the WTA tours, so yeah, there were a few sort of more lower profile events, but great to see Taylor Townsend getting back up there. Do you think she could get back into the top 100?
I really do. I think she's a player with great talent. I think she's very happy on the court, and if you can put together some of the wins like this, it's almost harder to get some of these very challenging ITF titles than it is to progress on some of the main tour events. So watch out 2023.
Well, I mean, my fun fact of the week, guys, was obviously Rafa related.
No.
I know. And it doesn't really involve tennis, to be quite honest.
Another baby?
No, not a baby, but a wedding. Not his wedding, but one of his best mates, Tomeo. Well, a lot of Rafa fans will know who he is. Rafa dashed across from Paris back home to Mallorca so that he could go to his best mate's wedding, which obviously shows his dedication. But yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want to go to a nice wedding at a country estate on Mallorca? So I think he made the right choice.
He basically pied off the practice schedule to hop on a flight, was it? Back to Mallorca from Paris.
There may have been some disappointed fans at Bercy. Apologies. Mm. But, you know, priorities for Rafa. But yeah, Joel, what did you have for your last 7 days on tour?
My highlight of the week was Borna Coric, who I found out, obviously very, very decent player. He is actually third on the all-time list of most top five wins without ever being in the top 10. He defeated Stefanos Tsitsipas in Vienna, puts him third on the list. He's won 12 matches against top five opponents. He's still only 25 years old, and he could feasibly, I think, become the outright winner because Nick Kyrgios and Feliciano Lopez are the two players above him, but they're only two matches above him, both on 14. And as I say, I think, yeah, Borna Coric, sometimes a bit of a forgotten man, I feel, because of his injuries, but certainly his talent is indisputable.
Will it happen in Paris, Joel?
Ooh, it could do, because Nick Kyrgios isn't there.
No, he isn't. But I was surprised that Lopez had never been top 10. Is that right, Kim? Must be.
Well, yeah, I suppose it would be. I mean, that's a grave injustice after his... we know
his, after his grass court seasons.
His talents on a tennis court.
And all
court,
of his endless wild cards.
He has won doubles, Grand Slams, so, well, at least one anyway. But yeah, well, I think that's all very good and well, Joel. I mean, Borna Coric, if he can keep it up, yeah, certainly next year, watch out, you know, watch out everyone else on tour. He just needs to make sure he's getting the same record against people who aren't in the top 10 or top 20, I should say. Let's look at what happened, though, on the tour last week, because we had a couple of tournaments. We were out in Vienna, we were out in Bâle. Daniil Medvedev, you alluded to earlier, Joel, he did win a title in Vienna, his second of the season, beating Denis Shapovalov in three sets, 4-6, 6-3, 6-2. Until the final, he hadn't lost a set or even lost his serve en route to the final. So he has now got his spot at the Turin event in a couple of weeks' time as a result. What did you make of Daniil Medvedev's performance? Is he kind of coming back, playing his best, you know, in advance of the tour finals? Are we going to pop him up there as one to watch? Now he's seemingly got his groove back.
I'd put him definitely in the mix for, yeah, one of the favourites, I think, for the ATP end of season finals in Turin. I would base that more so on his performance against Novak Djokovic, you know, in Astana, you know, those two sets they played. I know it ended very, very abruptly with Medvedev retiring, but the quality he showed there makes me think that, you know, he's having a very, you know, he's come back, he's playing some very high level tennis, and he's actually got the trophy to go with it this week. And, you know, as I was saying earlier, the fact that, you know, very nice, I think, given, yeah, he's just become a dad this week. I think he donated or he earmarked and highlighted his wife in the winner's speech. But yeah, very good victory for him against in the final. I think we saw all of his kind of movement on display, his defensive capabilities. And although I was a little bit surprised, I think Denis Shapovalov took that first set. Yeah, Medvedev really put too much pressure on Shapovalov, asked him too many questions, and yeah, was able to get it done in routine in the end. But yeah, still a good showing, I think, from Shapovalov, given, I think, again, a player who's had, I'd say, more downs than ups this season.
I was really impressed by Medvedev in this one. I think it was really impressive the way he was able to play this match in a super disciplined way, because some of the tennis that Dennis was hitting, I mean, I could not believe, I'd not seen that level from him probably ever. And I think Medvedev said after the match that he just thought that Dennis was playing unreal tennis, and he just thought, if I can just hang in this, maybe I'll I'll have a chance there. And he did. And it just shows what a great counterpuncher he is to be able to realize his opponent is playing so well and still be able to keep his level up and then take advantage of it. Because I think he's played him many times before and he knows that it's quite easy for Shapovalov to go kind of off the boil. But I think he's definitely in with a good, good shot when it comes to end of season championships. He talked about how he likes the end of the season. He kind of balances his seasons quite well. He loves an end of season peak. And I think in Paris, he's going to be really tricky to beat, having kind of won that title before. It was a good, good performance.
I'd quite like to see Medvedev Djokovic again, given we didn't get a final conclusion, I think, in Kazakhstan. And as I said, the spectacle they put on was just fantastic. So it feels like, yeah, quite a lot of players are kind of in form at the moment, you know, going into end of season finals. We'll obviously get on to Felix Auger-Aliassime. Hopefully he will be there. But Medvedev, Djokovic, Rafa back in the fold as well. Yeah, it feels like there's a lot more kind of in-form players to me, you know, at the moment where, yeah, it's leading to Turin. I'm feeling, you know, to me, quite, you know, quite wide open, which is quite refreshing because I think, you know, we get to this point in the season and I think sometimes the, you know, the narrative is more around, you know, who's fit and who's not carrying any injuries. But I feel like the reality is for someone like a Medvedev, you know, the middle of his season was quiet because of, you know, Wimbledon, you know, not allowing him to compete. Yeah, he took, you know, the majority of the clay season off as well. So I think, you know, that was unfortunate for him. And, you know, with the world number one ranking as well, you know, it was very much kind of drips and drabs and wasn't real any sort of consistency. But certainly the start of his season and it looks like the end of his season are coming on strong.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, just going away from Medvedev, who I agree, I think he's looking like going to be a prime contender for the Tour Finals. Another player who obviously won't be there, has been there before and maybe hopefully will be back there at some point, is Dominic Thiem, who's now into the top 100 again, at number 100. He obviously lost to Daniil Medvedev in the round of 16 in Vienna, but it's just nice that he is gradually getting a few more wins on the tour and is, you know, he chose not to take the qualifying wildcard, for example, into this. And he's able to obviously get into a few more things now, and hopefully this is going into next season. He's sort of at least where a bit closer to where he'd like to be, which is a I think a nice positive end to his kind of comeback season. You know, slow and steady, that's I think the name of the game for him. And I guess a couple of other results from this week, British players. Cameron Norrie had a terrible time, really, losing to Marcus Giron straight sets. That was quite a poor loss. I don't know what you both made of that. I know, Chris, you've got some beef with Cam Norrie, haven't you? I think from
I do. I shared it on the scandal WhatsApp today. I was just having a browse of Cam Norrie's Instagram.
As you do, and
I was swiping across for a carousel that he posted, and I was like, I recognise that picture. And it was a picture that I took when I was in Stockholm and I was courtside. And there it was. And I was looking around. Is it tagged? Is there a photo credit? Couldn't quite find one. But nevertheless, it's nice to see that my photography skills are being recognised by an ATP top 20 player.
Copyright issues though there, Chris.
Yeah, we need to make the most of this. Yeah, 100%.
Yes, it was. Someone did message me and said, can we get royalties from this? And I said, I'm not sure. So maybe we just, Joel, if you could drop him a DM, that would be fantastic. Okay. Just to follow up there.
I'll be very diplomatic about it. We'll be like, Cam, we love you. Can we get a credit, please?
Or a cheeky £100. Yeah, nice,
come on,
you know,
on the podcast.
Or come on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's better. Yes. That's a better idea.
Yes.
Then you can use all our photos. No, actually, Lucy Safarova once posted one of my photos on her Instagram. I had gone to, I didn't go to the WTA player party, but I went to like look at the red carpet because it's quite exciting. Ooh. The purple carpet, I think, as it was. I took a photo of her arriving and some other players, and she I'd obviously tagged her on social and she just stole the photograph, but there we go. I'm a fan of her, so it's
how
fine.
Dare she,
but yeah,
how dare
I know.
And what year was that, Kim?
Oh, years ago now, maybe 20.
And we're over it, are we?
Oh yeah. I'm still, yeah, bitter to yeah. this day.
I mean Kim, a player I enjoyed seeing return, what seemingly returned to form, Grigor Dimitrov getting to the semi-finals. Had a very good very routine win against Andriy Rublev, who I think is going to be at the finals in Turin, but has been made to wait by Grigor Dimitrov. Who got to the semi-finals of a 500, and yeah, again, a player who has been, you know, has not been a kind of common talking point on the podcast, I feel, for a long time. But yeah, had a very good week, I think, in Vienna, getting through to the semis. Yes, losing to Daniil Medvedev, but yeah, impressive nonetheless.
Yeah, we know on his day, Grigor is a demon on the court. So yeah, good on him. And I saw also that Dan Evans, although he won a few rounds, got to the quarters in the singles, he beat Joe Salisbury and Rajiv in the doubles.
That's a spicy one, isn't it?
I know. So,
do you think he messaged that to Leon Smith afterwards?
I think it was. I think he was definitely inspired by his recent comments to back that one up, because I mean that was very routine. I think when it comes to the Davis Cup double selections, I think if Dan Evans doesn't get picked, I think he might be even more vocal than he already has been about the selection issues.
Bit of hoo-ha potentially going on. Well, going to happen there.
Him and Jack Draper, please play doubles at the Davis Cup. My campaign continues.
Let's have a quick look at Basel, because we had FAA. I mean, he's got a title for each of his, you know, initials in his acronym in the past few weeks, because he's got three titles on the trot. I can't believe it. 13 wins in a row on the tour from a man who just could not get over the finish line in finals to save his life. And now he's got, four singles titles and three on the trot. He beat Holger Rune in straight sets to win in Basel, 6-3, 7-5. He's obviously in the form of his life. You know, he beat Carlos Alcaraz in the semi-finals. You know, also came through Bublik, Kecmanovic. So, like, just he's on solid form, and I'm really curious to see how long this form will last, if he can keep it going into the Masters and the Tour finals, because I'd love to see it personally.
He didn't blink, did he? He completely stayed with it the entire tournament. And I think that's the thing that was most impressive from watching it this week, was at no point did he falter in a way that we've sort of seen him do before, where his level has dipped slightly. That Carlos match, I could not believe how, I'm not calling Carlos average, but I'm saying he was made to look average by Felix. You would never have thought the rankings were the way that they were, given the confidence and the composure that Felix had throughout that match. And Alcaraz was making some errors and didn't necessarily have the answers in that sort of that matchup. So as we say, and Joel's already said, it's really setting itself up for a very interesting Paris-Bercy tournament, but also end of season finals, with so many players playing really well and so many sort of questions around players in terms of their form, like Alcaraz and Nadal in terms of where their level will be at.
I mean, I think the biggest thing that's been, you know, is working so well for him, even we spoke about it last week, going to speak about it again this week, his serve and his forehand from the back of the court, it's such a massive weapon for him. And, you know, I don't think he faced very few break points throughout the whole tournament. I don't think got broken through the whole event. And, you know, Holger Rune, he's had a great, again, last couple of weeks in terms of his momentum and his confidence, and how he's, you know, really kind of stepped up what it feels like. I feel like, you know, we were originally speaking about Holger Rune as like this sort of clay court player. So it's almost been, to me, a little bit kind of pleasantly surprised by how well he's been able to adapt to kind of like like an indoor hard court. And to me, it's kind of fascinating how both these players are very much, you know, well-regarded. We're really curious to see how they're going to do. You know, does this mean Felix Auger-Aliassime is in, you know, in contention maybe for a Grand Slam next season? I don't know. But I think what I find interesting is how, I think we have to acknowledge for Auger-Aliassime, it's taken longer for him to get to this sort of peak. You know, he's had to go through some challenges kind of first of all. You know, we spoke about, you know, the most obvious one is ATP finals, where I think he was 0-8, whereas Holger Rune, I mean, he has come, I think, burst on, or maybe even a little bit more quickly. I think, you know, I think he's, you know, very still a teenager technically, and is in the top 20. So it's just, to me, kind of fascinating how in tennis you can have players who take time to blossom. And we've seen that with I think Felix Auger-Aliassime, and then we have players like Holger Rune, who I think just have a bit more of like a bit more of a bang and a bit more of an impact that is more apparent a bit more instantly.
I mean, at the ripe old age of 22, Joel,
yeah,
for
I
Felix.
Know. I mean, he's... Well, I know, but he's been on the tour. I feel like with FAA, he's been on the tour for a while. And I think we're actually still there with like a Denis Shapovalov of like, when is it going to happen? When is it going to happen? And, yeah. You know, he had, you know, he got to the, you know, his first semi-final of the, you know, the US Open, you know, at the back end of not obviously last season. And I think just to see this and this momentum that I think we've all kind of known has had it in him, but it's just, again, just taken a little bit more time than I think people were, to be honest, like willing to give him, you know, when seeing him on the tour.
And he's now the GOAT of October 2022. and who knows how long it will continue. But
channeling his inner Annette Contaveit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he probably does love a, you know, indoor hard court as well. So I'm just very pleased for him because it's nice after such a long time. And yeah, like you said, he's still so young. I mean, this could be the start of something really major, as many people predicted. So good on Felix.
Who are you more excited by going into next season in terms of Auger-Aliassime or Holger
or
Rune?
Alcaraz.
Rune, because Holger Rune to me is the wild card or the more unknown entity that has kind of come into it. I think Auger-Aliassime, I can say, yeah, he can sustain it. Alcaraz, yeah, he can sustain it. But Rune to me is the one who has come out of nowhere a little bit.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm still personally more excited about Felix to see if he can really elevate even further and get right up to the top of the rankings. But I think Rune will still be in his like next developmental year. Whereas I think if Felix can keep this form up, it's like, is he now going into the real upper echelons? So I think there's still at different stages. I don't know if you would disagree.
I agree with you. I agree with you with that. I think it's different. I have different excitements for next year. So like for Felix, as Kim said, I want to see him become a top five player and make that leap now. And with Holger, I think, I mean, I'm very annoying on our WhatsApp thread because I'm always saying, oh, maybe this is going to do something magic today. And then he lost in straight sets in the final. But I think I'm because I live in Denmark, I'm now very biased in this. But I do think from watching him play live that he has so much ability and so much game. And for him to have made the improvements he has done in such a short period of time, I do think the sky's the limit. But we've seen it before. You know, when Sasha was younger at 17, when he broke out into the tour in a big way, it is hard to make that leap, even from top 20 to top 10. To then
it can take time.
Push further, but I think it can. But I think what Rune has showed is quite a lot of maturity in the last few weeks and improving his mentality, which is impressive.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that actually has impressed me with Auger-Aliassime, because when you do see him on the court, I always compare it to kind of Denis Shapovalov. They're very, very different in terms of the maturity, I think, that Aliassime brings, and the kind of coolness, and you feel like he's always very kind of composed. He doesn't show his emotions, I think, as much as some of his contemporaries, like a Carlos Alcaraz or even a Denis Shapovalov. But I think we've seen from Rune and Shapovalov that, you know, making those improvements in terms of maturity and bringing a different kind of mental side to the tennis court actually can help your overall game, because I think that's been, particularly with Shapovalov, one of his weaknesses. And it was for me a pleasant surprise again to kind of see him this week show a bit more kind of maturity. I think particularly when in terms of his shot selection, I think he's been, you know, criticized in the past in terms of trying to go for the highlights reel too early on, you know, in the point, and actually having a bit more kind of control and composure and picking your right moments. I think that kind of shone through for me this week. And yeah, Felix to me is maybe still a little bit ahead in terms of that department, but I think again helps, I think, set him up for those kind of bigger tournaments to come. Who knows, you know, on the grandest stage of all at a Grand Slam.
Well, on that note, let's take a quick break, but we'll be back in the second half where we'll be talking about the official announcement of the United Cup, all the round robin draws for the WTA finals, which gets underway today, and also what's to come in the Paris Masters this week. So do not go anywhere.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris, sponsored by downloadtennis.com. And now we're going to move on to, of course, a par for the courts game before we get on to this week's tennis. Chris, I believe you have been ruffling feathers potentially by, I think you've got a really hardcore one for me and Joel to test.
I have indeed.
Is that going to ruffle our feathers?
I think it's going to be a challenge. I think it shouldn't be too challenging, but I think it might prove to be on the spot.
I'm nervous already.
It's not something we talk about all the time. You have the option, though, how we'd like to play this, whether we go for setting par, because there are 14 correct answers that I'm looking for. So we could do our first Joel versus Kim back and forth, or have we done that one? We haven't.
I think we might have done a long time ago, but I'm confident I'm going to beat Joel.
Shall we? Okay.
To be fair, I feel like everyone is confident that they're going to beat.
Strong words.
Okay. Well, I will tell you what the category is, and then you can decide. But I think we should do a back and forth. The category is year-ending championship winners for the WTA Tour since the year 2000.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
That's not actually too bad. Potentially, I think.
And there's been 14.
Yeah. We might
14 in the last of the. Well, it's not the full 20 years, because there was a break in 2020 when it wasn't held because of the pandemic. So just factor that into your answer, Joel, if you thought there was a 2020 winner.
Okay.
It didn't happen.
Okay, so who wants to go first?
I think we will let Joel go first, because I think the chances of him coming through this are very slim.
You're giving me like the pity go first, like,
okay,
response.
Kim can start.
Actually, no, I want it. I want to go first.
Yes, okay, okay.
Okay. Serena Williams.
Correct.
Ooh, okay. Alina Svitolina.
2018 champion.
Garbiñe Muguruza.
Indeed.
God, I'm already struggling.
Caroline Wozniacki.
Justine Henin.
Oh Lord, this is actually quite hard. Going back to 2000, now did Venus Williams ever win it? Venus Williams.
Correct.
Oh, I thought that was going to be a wrong answer. I'm going to say Kim Clijsters.
Another correct answer.
I feel like what I'm going to say is really rogue now, but Anna Chakvetadze.
That is a rogue one. I have to say that's an incorrect answer.
Oh,
wow,
no.
Kim, Joel, Kim. I think I've got more as well,
Joel. Joel, would you like to continue with a couple more?
I think my next one was going to be Victoria Azarenka.
Okay, well, that's where it would have ended.
Oh, that's also incorrect.
Yes.
Petra Kvitova?
Indeed. Would you like to hear the full... Petra Kvitova? Yes, that's a correct answer.
Oh, yes.
That is.
Was Ash Barty a correct answer?
Are you out of answers? Or
I was so worried to say
that was
Ash
also
Barty.
A correct answer. Yes.
Because
yes.
She's retired, I forget about her now.
yeah, it's amazing that happened this
Lindsay
year.
Lindsay Davenport?
The complete list? Not this side of the
okay.
of 2000.
Okay. That's
she
all
won
I've
it in
got.
1999.
That's all I've got.
Well, Joel, congratulations. That was a very solid performance.
Yes.
Other answers that you could have had was Radwanska, who won it in 2015.
Oh, yes.
And then Amelie Mauresmo took the title in 2005. Mm. Maria Sharapova took the title in 2004. Oh, and then the final correct answer
Ivanovic?
Was Hingis in 2000.
Oh, Hingis. Yes.
Of course.
Wow.
Who... That's definitely not our area of expertise, is it, Joel?
Wow. Who went first
Chris
was pretty much
that.
A big... Who went first was a pretty big call for that one.
I would love to have seen Joel go that confident with Azarenka and get it wrong.
I don't know why I said Anna Chakravarti.
I think just to show off, you know, who she is.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. I was honestly thinking Azarenka or Kvitova was going to be my next guest. So, yes. But no, that was very, very good. I enjoyed that. Yeah. Right.
I'm not surprised, Joel.
I know. Brain cells
I don't feel like I have won like any sort of game on the pod for
ever.
A long, long time.
Yes.
So yeah, really happy with that. We do have a mailbag.
Next week.
Until next week, exactly. We do have a mailbag, and it's from Jack, who got in touch with us on email, and they asked us, with the end of season finals starting up this week in Fort Worth, I would love to know, who do you think will be in the final eight at the next season's finals in 2023?
That is a great question.
That's
is this
a good
from...
question, yeah.
I think this is hard because of Simona Halep. And to me, Simona Halep would have been a surefire person in my top eight, but I've had to leave her out because I have no idea what's going to happen there.
Well, Chris, who have you got?
So, unsurprisingly, I went for Iga. I thought she's got to be there. I put Ons in there as well. And then I've gone a little bit more rogue. I've gone for Qinwen Zheng. I think this could be a breakout season. I'm calling it now, 2023 Roland Garros champion. Anisimova, I'm always a big supporter of her. I think Krejcikova will be back in the mix after showing some great play. And then I think Tursunov and Bencic will be a very fruitful partnership next year.
Yep.
And then rounding it off, I have Coco Gauff and then Jessie Pegula.
Yeah, I've got Jess Pegula in mine. I think she's so consistent. She's still going to be up there. I've also gone for Gauff, Iga, Ons. I'm questioning Osaka. I feel like she's got to do something again, hasn't she?
Oh, she doesn't
Maybe
play enough
for
me.
Next year is going to be the year.
Yeah.
I'm also tempted to go for Caroline Garcia, obviously.
Oh, do you think that? You think that she'll back it up?
And also given her recent coaching... announcement. I don't know. Yeah, that's why I'm questioning myself. I'd like to think that Muguruza will be back up there. And obviously, I guess Sabalenka, pretty consistent. Maybe a Clara Towson or someone like that is going to come forward.
Ooh,
okay. Or a Leila Annie Fernandez might kind of continue her rise, because that sort of seems to have paused, but
I've noticed
like
none of us
potential.
None of us are thinking Emma Raducanu.
No,
in the top eight.
Not yet.
I can't anymore. I can't. No. I honestly
can't
with those predictions.
No, I've gone Świątek, Jabeur, Gauff, Bencic, Krejcikova. I have put Muguruza in there because I feel like, yeah, she's hit rock bottom. She's going to come straight back up from there. And then I've got Sakkari making up the numbers this year. I think she's sadly going to be making up the numbers as well next year. And I've got Sabalenka as well. I think I'm being a bit harsh on Jessie Pegula. I think it's... I mean, she's number three. I don't know. I'm not convinced she's going to do the same next year. I think, yeah, Coco Gauff for me is going to be the sole American in the top eight for me next year.
Fair enough. I was going to say something I saw this week about Muguruza, though. She may be falling on hard times on the tennis court. Off the tennis court, she is not falling on hard times.
What, she learned a new dance move?
Highest paid No, the fifth highest paid female athlete in the world.
Wow.
Behind Osaka, Serena Venus, and Simone Biles. So,
sorry, Jessica Pegula?
No, Muguruza, sorry.
Oh, right, sorry. Yes, no.
Because I was about to say, Pegula's not finding hard time on the tennis court.
She doesn't need the money, she's Kim.
She's got a billionaire dad or something. Something like that. Doesn't her parent, her dad owns an American football team? Something like that.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. She's heir to a big fortune there. So maybe that's why she's not on the list.
Well, great question from Jack. Got us thinking. It's very hard to predict, especially when it comes to WTA. But we shall see who of the current cohort are there next year. In the news this last week, we do have, a few talking points. But the United Cup has become an official thing, which is, I guess, the new formulation of the Hopman Cup, essentially. It's the new joint ATP-WTA team tennis event out in Australia prior to the AO. 18 countries. It's going to be across Sydney, Brisbane and Perth. So it's going to be six groups of three teams. It's going to be four singles and one mixed doubles per tie. And then we're going to have, obviously, different teams advancing through. There's also ranking points on offer. There's a logo for it as well. ATP Cup is no longer. Hopman Cup has, I guess this is, like the new version of the Hopman Cup. What are your thoughts on the format? The fact that this is definitely official. Are you pleased? Are you glad we've got a mixed event back to start the season off?
Can I ask a question? So is it two players per team? That's what my understanding is. Or is it, can you have more players in a team? Like, do we have substitutes would be my question? Because what if Raducanu plays and needs to withdraw from a match? You know, are you allowed to have someone else as part of the team?
I don't think GB make the cut at the moment, actually, you know.
I think that's probably true, actually. But I'm imagining that one player plays two singles rather than four players on a team. That's my question. But either way, very excited. I think it's, I mean, we love the Hopman Cup. We've made no secret of that on the pod. I love a mixed doubles. I always think that gives some fantastic matches. And I think the fact that there are two singles matches for ATP and WTA as part of each of the ties, I mean, it gives a great opportunity to warm up ahead of the Australian Open. I would say working in a sort of design area, the logo I'm not a fan of. I think they've taken it very literally, the U of United, with a blue moving into a purple to signify, I guess, the WTA and the ATP tour.
Wow, I did not get that at all from looking at that logo. I got like...
Oh, didn't you?
I got like a hollowed out tennis ball. They were trying to do like 3D.
Yeah, it's a bit bally.
Yes. I think it is a hollowed out tennis ball into the shape of a U. I think we have figured out what's going on.
But no, it's...
No, Ostrava exclamation mark.
No, I think, it's a great... I think, I'm really excited. I think a lot more excited, to be honest, than when we heard about the launch of the ATP Cup. I think, last week I was talking about, I love having kind of combined events when, there's ATP and both WTA on site. And the fact that this will have that and also have mixed doubles kind of thrown in, I think it's going to be great. I think also having ranking points will help. I think... It'll be interesting to see, I think, how the players treat it, whether they treat it like Hopman Cup, because, Hopman Cup didn't have ranking points and therefore it was a little bit more exhibition-y, a little bit more playful. And I think that's why, a lot of the kind of top players love playing it, and it gave us very kind of unique partnerships. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how serious I think players, kind of take it and whether they... do interpret it as an equivalent of Hopman Cup or whether they take it a little bit more seriously because, ranking points are going to be available. But I certainly think, at the start of the season, this is such a great, unique and distinctive event to get involved in that is going to be, really interesting to see how it kind of, plays out. And, of course, there are, there are going to be other kind of singles events on the tours going on at the same time. So, I think Russia and Belarus are not allowed to play in the event. So those individuals will have to go elsewhere. So again, it'll be interesting to see how it sort of fits in. It's not got an exclusive, week to play with. But certainly I think it can be an interesting addition in the build-up to the Australian Open.
Yeah, I think the logo's a bit corporate. You know, it's for me, it's a bit bland. It looks like some kind of tech company logo, but that's just my personal opinion. But
an apprentice logo. Almost.
I'm sure the event will be lovely. We've had a bit of WTA finals chat already, but let's look ahead to the end of season finals because they are getting underway today out in Fort Worth in Texas. So we've got the two groups that have been announced. All the promo photos have been taken. Players have done the old red carpet in their outfits. We've got group Tracy Austin and group Nancy Ritchie. So Tracy Austin's group, we've got Świątek, Coco Gauff, Caroline Garcia and Daria Kazatkina. And group Nancy Ritchie, we've got Ons Jabeur and Jessie Pegula, Maria Sakkari and Aryna Sabalenka. What are your initial thoughts on the breakdown of those two groups? Do you think there's one group that is significantly stronger than the other? Do you think it's a fair divide?
Oh, Tracy Austin, I think, is the stronger group. It's the group where I wasn't sure who would... Well, I'm still not obviously saying I'm sure because I know how predictions go on the pod. But when you've got Iga and you've got Garcia in there as well as Gauff, I think that is where the real strength of that group lies. Whereas I do think that in the second group, in Nancy Ritchie, it's Ons and Pegula are really players I can see past based on their form this year. That's my take.
I mean, that's interesting because I was reading in the build-up, Pegula has a losing record against everyone in her group. So I don't think it's as like much of a done deal. I do think, you know, if you base it on like the form this year, I think there's... Like, for me, there is kind of four outstanding candidates in the top four rankings. Świątek, Gauff, Jabeur and Pegula. But yeah, I don't think it's as, you know, certain for me. But certainly I think in that first group, yeah, I'm still sort of leaning towards the top players. I think it's, yeah, to me, I think there is a bit more of a divide, I think, versus, you know, between the top players and the players who I'm not expecting to really put up much of a fight versus, I think, in Turin, where I do think it could be, you know, a lot less predictable.
Which is quite interesting, really, because normally it's the other way around, isn't it? With the women's and men's. But yeah, I agree. I think that the sort of most in-form players are in the Tracy Austin group. I feel like Sakkari is I feel like very rude saying this, but I feel like she's kind of making up the numbers. But that sounds awful, doesn't it, saying that?
Don't worry, I said it on the pod last week.
In no way
Kim.
Am I predicting her.
It's a safe space.
I've gone for, I don't know about you guys, I've gone for Jabeur and Pegula to make it out of Nancy Ritchie and Iga and Caroline Garcia to make it out of Tracy Austin. And I think I've got an Ons Iga final in my pathway through with Iga winning. I feel like we potentially will have all the same champion in our predictions.
I have gone quite similar to you, but I think I've got the difference in who comes first and second in the group. So I actually have Ons versus Iga in the semifinals. And then I've got Garcia versus Pegula. And I put Garcia going through the final because what I like about the round robin format is you can play the same player twice, just like last year when Kontaveit beat Muguruza, I think, in the round robin and then lost her in the final. I think that's fact. I'm hoping so. I think it makes it a bit spicier, you know, a bit of fun if two players are playing particularly well in one group.
Joel, who have you chosen for your predictions for this one?
Yeah, I've got Świątek, Jabeur in the semi-finals, and I've got Świątek defeating Ons Jabeur in the semi-finals, and I've got Coco Gauff defeating Jessie Pegula as well. I think there's gonna be an all-American matchup. I'm expecting Coco Gauff to come through that, and I'm seeing a Świątek Gauff final, but I just have to go with Iga Świątek based on what you guys have said and based on that she has been, you know, the standout player on the tour this year. You know, she's refreshed, she's recuperated. I'm still not sure if she should have played San Diego, to be quite honest. But I think it's going to be, in theory, if Świątek plays the level she's been showing week in, week out, it's hard to argue against her.
I agree. We're kind of on the same wavelength. So let's see what unfolds in the next week out in Fort Worth.
I'm more curious to see how this event is going to go because, you know, it's not been like the other years when it's, you know, we've known it at the start of the season and, you know, we've been looking forward to it. You know, it's been quite uncertain. I think, you know, since the pandemic's been over, I think a lot of the calendar has just been, it's a quarter here, a quarter there, and it's events announced with very little kind of planning time. And sometimes that can go against you. You know, we saw in Naples with the Naples Cup on the ATP side, have lots of issues with the courts having to be relayed. And, you know, I'm obviously not hoping that this event will suffer any sort of problems like that. But I think it does put under the microscope, you know, events that do get, you know, nominated to host something during the season when time is of the essence. And yeah, how it goes, I think it's going to be fascinating to see if maybe the tennis maybe doesn't live up to the billing because Iga Świątek's just going to steamroll it.
I think I can tell you with confidence, though, the court has been laid. The court is down.
The court has been laid.
It
That's
has arrived.
A start,
yes,
isn't it?
It actually arrived from Naples. It was traveling over.
Yeah.
So that court's really doing the rounds now. But they've sold over 30,000 tickets. Mm. So I think it's.
How impressive does that sound? Yeah, Joel, you've got umbrage of that.
Yeah, I was like, but there's a lot of days of tennis to be played. And if there's day and night sessions, I don't know. Is it? I can't remember if it's a day night format, but. Does 30,000 sound more impressive than it actually is?
That's still quite a lot of people in Texas going to see tennis. Okay.
But is it a massive stadium like they have in America?
It's quite a large stadium, yes. Well, either way, I was thought that was quite a nice number, but I guess that's less than a day's play at Wimbledon.
That is, well, yeah. I mean, we'll have to.
How's
wait
that going
to
look on the TV screen? Is what I'm curious.
You just zoom in, very close shot, very close shot.
No panning of the back seat. I mean, let's have a look at the other big event happening this week, which is the Paris Masters. So we've got, lots of big names back in action. Rafa's there, Novak's there. Carlos Alcaraz is the top seed, of course. Daniil Medvedev, can he keep up his good form? Can FAA make it four on the trot? Everyone's there, basically, aren't they? It's very exciting. I mean, we're not there, but although you guys are going somewhere else very shortly, we'll get onto that in a bit. But what are your initial thoughts on Paris Masters? Who are you predicting for the win?
Isn't it amazing we have actually got a Paris Masters, which what feels like an absolutely full field? Because do you remember like a few years ago?
It's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah. Because you remember like a few years ago, it was like the event just... There was like no... It was like the final was on the Sunday and the tour finals at the O2 would start on the Monday. And as a result, many players didn't play it. So
it was the wooden spoon. And then you win the tournament and you end up in the end of season championships, having not won matches all year. And then Jack Sock booked his flight to the, you know, wherever it is.
Yeah, you do get more rogue winners at this one often, like a Jack Sock. Or whoever wins turns up, yeah, really tired.
Karen Khachanov won. Did Karen Khachanov win it?
Yeah. I think Songa won it as well, didn't he?
They did indeed.
Anyway, who's going to win it in 2022? That's what we want to know.
Djokovic.
I will... You think Djokovic?
Mm-hmm.
That is...
I think Rafa's going to go out early. I think he's going out early. I'm not expecting him
to... PCB?
Yeah, or maybe a Denis Shapovalov. They could play each other.
Mm. Oh yes,
the third round.
That's a bit nasty, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's got to. I don't think I can bet against Djokovic. Really, I think four in a row would be unprecedented for Felix. I remember who was it that did it? Murray in 2011. He took three in 3 weeks.
Took three,
and then I'm not sure if it counts last year, Casper, with three 250s when no one else was playing.
Well, Kyrgios doesn't count it, that's for sure.
No, he doesn't. So I would go with Djokovic, but if not, I'm going to go Gilles Simon in his final tournament.
Well, I mean, Chris, he's a set and 3-2 down to Andy Murray at the moment. So hopefully...
He loves a long match. He loves a long match.
Well, do you know
I
what?
Swear Andy Murray is always playing when, like, we record.
Every time we record, yes.
Monday night match.
Interesting fact about Andy Murray, Gilles Simon. I was reading. It is the most prolific in terms of matches
played against each other in terms of a rivalry outside of the big three. I think they've played each other 11 times at Masters events.
So Murray Simon is like a fed owl.
Yeah, but outside the big, outside the big three, yes.
Oh. Well, I mean, this could be the time when he gets that another win at Masters 1000. It could be for Gilles Simon.
I mean, Cam Norrie's already won today, so that's good.
Is he your winner?
Well, no. One pair who won't be winning is Jannik Sinner. He's lost already. Schwartzman's out. But yeah, Taylor Fritz is through. I think that's the only notable ones from today.
Just a word on Schwartzman, actually. I think I was reading he's lost 7 in a row. He's gone out of the first round in... he's not in... he's not had a very good end of the season. So yeah, be interesting to see how he bounces back next season. But he's had a very rough end to the year.
Kim, who's going to win Medvedev, Felix, if they have a matchup? I'm putting you on the spot on that one.
Well, because I think either of them will be the finalist against Djokovic. Same. I think Medvedev. I think Felix might.
I think so too.
Be a bit tired.
Yeah.
But I think
I'd agree.
Three sets.
Octopus
to
always wins.
Novak in the final. Yeah. It's a tricky one. I'm very intrigued. So I'm the most excited for the Paris Masters I have been in several years.
So, same.
Yeah.
So excited.
It's very good. And even more exciting, just moving on to future tennis, Billie Jean King Cup Finals in Glasgow. You are both going to be there, aren't you? Looking a bit ahead. Very exciting. You've got accreditation.
I know. Indeed. So amazing.
Indeed.
I've got such a broad smile on my face.
They're letting us behind the scenes.
Yes. I mean, yes, listeners, me and Chris are going to be at the Billie Jean King Cup Finals. We have got media accreditation. All we assume that means is we're just going to have a lanyard around our necks.
Just a lanyard. Nothing
else. Let us into the press room.
That's something, Joel.
But yeah, we're going to hopefully be recording.
We can ask questions.
We can ask questions, yes. Rebecca Marino.
I've got many questions for her. I want a one-on-one with Rebecca Marino so
Gabby
we can put
Dabrowski,
some questions to
Storm
her.
Storm Sanders, we've got questions for you. Please come on our podcast.
Please send us your questions.
Yeah, what do you guys want Joel and Chris to cover? You know, we want to hear just not about the tennis, but we want to hear more about queuing.
Your most exciting and interesting questions, and we will see if we can weave them into a press conference.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah,
and then never get accredited again.
Yes,
don't ruin it for the podcast.
Yes, listeners, we will be there at the Billie Jean King Cup. We're going to be hopefully recording from the event. Each day we are there. So if you are there and you want to, you know, you want to meet Joel and Chris, you want to actually put some faces to voices. Just let us know on social media or via email. We're always happy to talk tennis to fans in attendance. But yeah, looking forward to it because we were in Prague last year. I'm curious to see how Glasgow compares.
Hopefully more people there, I would say.
But the beer's more expensive.
Yes, that's probably the situation, I imagine. Actually, Kim, that's the tournament in a nutshell.
I'm just sad I can't join you guys, but
I know.
I'm stuck in Swindon potentially next week.
It's a busy season for you, Kim.
Yeah, my full-time job, my day job is crazy at this time of the year, so I can't get the time off. But I'll be there in spirit to join you. So I hope you have a cracking time. But I think that brings us to a close for this week, doesn't it? We'll eagerly anticipate the results from Fort Worth and Paris over the next week. And we'll be back, I guess, in a week's time to catch up as usual.
Yes, listeners, I hope you enjoyed listening to this latest catch up with Tennis Weekly. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action to come on the ATP and WTA tours, including all the finals coming up on whatever device you listen to us on. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. You can also listen to us on the DownloadTennis.com app. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
And you can follow us on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter at Tennis Weekly Pod. So do give us a like and a follow if you don't already. Let us know any thoughts, feedback, comments you may have, any questions for Joel and Chris for the Billie Jean King Cup Finals, or just any questions for the mailbag generally. You can also email those across to us. Tennisweeklypod@gmail.com is where you can find us. And don't forget to check out our website, www.tennisweekly.co.uk.
And before I finish, Chris, I almost forgot, how dare I? You have got a Stockholm diary entry. We weren't able to fit it into the podcast last week, but you have given us a diary entry, which is going to play after the credits of this episode. So listeners, if you have made it this far, listen to the end, because Chris is going to...
Stick with us.
Is there any more Cam Norrie references in your fan diaries?
Oh, absolutely. There was many, many incidents with Cam Norrie. And
okay,
maybe there will be another reference to the photo.
Well, listeners, if you're thinking about taking a trip to another tennis event, and maybe you thought about going to the Stockholm Open, then I recommend listening to Chris after the credits to get his take on the fan experience. But in the meantime, we are going to wrap up this episode of Tennis Weekly, and we will be back next week. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Hello, it is Chris here, and I have been out watching some live tennis, and we thought it would be a good idea to give you another tour diary where we can tell you about the experience of tournaments and what it's like to attend as a fan. So that if you're thinking of going out there and watching some live tennis, you can see if you think the Stockholm Open is a tournament for you. So the Stockholm Open is an ATP 250. And so that's the third rung of regular ATP tournaments after the 1000 and the 500 level tournaments. It takes place just north of Stockholm in the northeast, and it takes place in an area called Jadet, which is kind of off the beaten track. It's not an area where much happens. It's slightly on the industrial side, and the location in that area is the Kungliga Tennishallen, which is a very traditional, old school, sort of gymnasium vibes tennis hall. And it's been hosting the tournament since 1969. And it's also the home of the Kungliga Lawn Tennis Klubben, which has 1,100 members. And it also includes royalty as members. So it's a very beautifully kept facility, and a facility that is completely steeped in history. And when you are attending, something to bear in mind is that because it is an old school tennis hall, there are different areas. So you will be seated at times on wooden benches. So my advice to you would be, if you do need potentially a seat cover to make it comfortable, I would recommend bringing that with you. If you are on the side that is opposite to where the umpire's chair is, that's the side which has the balcony above it, they do all have in that main block to the side of the court, they are all proper seats. So if you are someone who does need a proper seat, then that is why I would recommend you purchasing tickets. The stadium has a capacity of 5,000, and they've recently rejigged how you are able to enter and exit the tournament. It's become a bit more of a thing, and I think it has aspirations to become even bigger, because previously you'd enter through the front doors of the club, and now you enter through a side entrance, which then takes you a much longer way around through a big corporate entertainment area, which then takes you all the way through to the Tennishallen. And that's something which I think you can understand why they've done, but I do think it does detract from the fan experience, because when we went to an evening session, we did have to queue for quite a while because they only had two people scanning tickets, and it is a long, long way. So It is quite chilly at times in Stockholm as well, so you can get caught out in the cold there. And I do think that when it comes to tournaments, they have to make sure the fans can get in to watch the match, because many people miss the start of the Tsitsipas match that we watched. In terms of the matches that we saw, we went to quarterfinals day. And that is the first day that is split into two sessions. So if you go prior to that, then it will be one ticket which covers all the matches that day. But we saw all the quarterfinals on one day and we were courtside for the first lot of matches. And there is no bad seat in the tennis Haarlem at all. And what's great about the nature of the tournament is that the practice courts are so close to where you're able to stand to right by the bar. And so they are on the way in, so you're able to see people play, but also at the sort of the entertainment facilities, you can be almost on the practice court, which is something that's great. You can't really get that close to tennis in lots of other tournaments. On the day of the quarterfinals, what is good about this tournament is that it takes place at a very tactically interesting time of the year because players are trying to qualify for the end of season championships at the NITO ATP finals. So lots of players are still playing these smaller tournaments, whereas when I went to Hamburg earlier in the year, the lineup was not as good because it fell in that sort of in-between period after Wimbledon, where there was a bit of a clay section before the US hardcourt swing. So you do get your money's worth in terms of top talent. And headlining it this year, it was supposed to be Taylor Fritz, who pulled out due to the pressures that he had on his body from doing well at some previous tournaments. And Tsitsipas stepped in and took a wild card and was the number one seed. So also on the billings were Cam Norrie, Holger Rune, Denis Shapovalov, Diminar, US Open semi-finalists, Francis Tiafoe. So there were some big names and some really interesting people that I hadn't seen play before. The first match we watched was the Norrie versus Rune match. We were courtside. So if you do like getting close to the action, I do recommend going during the week because you will be able to get tickets right at the front. And as I said, no bad seats, but you can get some fantastic seats. And that was a great match where Norrie played some really solid tennis, but I do think the lack of matches due to COVID did have an impact, and Holger was really playing well and crunching some backhands and he had a lot of belief. So that was particularly interesting. It was particularly interesting Holger this week because of the fact that he's just partnered with Patrick Mortoglu, and he was courtside giving lots of advice and lots of fist pumps. So that was very interesting to see and very impressive from the 19-year-old. Also fun seeing a Dane in Stockholm because it's so close to Denmark. There was lots of support and a fantastic atmosphere. We then saw Shapovalov versus Diminar, which was another good match. Unfortunately, Denis could not keep his emotions in check and he was swearing and behaving very badly. We were sat between him and his coach and it was very interesting to hear what they were saying, especially with the new ATP rule where you can hear what they're saying because they are coaching when you are on the same side as your coach. So that was a bit of a frustrating one where Shapovalov couldn't get or couldn't make enough balls and was making some quite impatient decisions. Diminar came through and his movement was really impressive. He moved so quickly and he's able to really absorb the pace. And I was very impressed with him, given the fact I didn't think he would be one of those players that would be able to crunch the ball. And he got some good pace on both wings. And then we did have the queuing issue. So because of the location, in Yardet, it isn't close to things. So if you want to get some food or something to eat, it's very limited actually in the facilities unless you are on a corporate or VIP package. It's very much set up for that. So whilst you're there, you will hear the noise of people dining and the clinging of glasses. So it's not a silent hall at all, but it is set up for the VIPs and for the club members. So if you leave, you then have to queue to get back in. And we did miss the start of Stefanos versus the Swedish local Mikael Ymer. And that atmosphere was fantastic. It was, if you like a refined tournament, it was very noisy. People are stamping their feet on the wooden boards of the arena. So it is a very hectic atmosphere in the evening session. So if that's not for you, I'd recommend the day session, where it is much more mild-mannered and much more chilled out. And I think the Friday night definitely brought the vibes from the Swedes that were in attendance. And then the final match that we saw, which did come on very late, was the Tiafoe-Ruusuvuori match. So if you are looking at going and you don't fancy a late night, definitely a day session, because the evening sessions do start at 6, so they can go quite late in the evening. And that was a bit of a non-event. Both of those matches were a little bit of a non-event, with Stefanos coming through quite easily, but making it a bit more difficult than it should have been. And then the same with sort of the TFO match, where he didn't really turn up. So it was, those matches, I'd say, were a bit disappointing. It was great to see a Swede at the Stockholm Open, to experience the madness of that and the madness of that event. So I would say, I prefer the day session personally from a tennis experience. It is that bit less hectic, and it is that much more easy to get around and to get, use the facilities that you need to. So I'd say that for me would be my recommendation. Another thing to note is that you can't take any food in or drink or any sort of fluid when you do go and sit down at your seat either. So you have to be very careful with that, and you have to consume stuff outside of the actual tennis hall itself, like where they play the tennis. And then we went to the finals day, which was fantastic. We did see a Brit in action there. Lloyd Glasspool was unfortunately defeated in the doubles final. And we got very, very close to watching the Stefanos warm-up for his final, literally a couple of meters away. And that was very interesting to see that so close and live. So I do recommend, if you are there, to check out the practice courts, because it is quite a unique experience. And that final was fantastic, where it's great to see someone really winning a match and playing at the top of their game. And it would have been a real disappointment if Tsitsipas had managed to sort of get back into it, if Rune hadn't held his nerve, because Rune had played such a fantastic match and it was so assured. So overall, I mean, it couldn't have been a better result for the tournament in terms of a Dane doing well in Sweden. There's a lot of Danish media attention there, and there's a lot of fan support for a sort of a semi-local playing against the number one seed and kind of a household name in Tsitsipas. I went with two friends from Copenhagen, and they have different levels of tennis experience, and they both really enjoyed it, from the nature of it being so close to the action, but also the fact there were some big names there. So as a tennis enthusiast myself, and with two kind of varying degrees of kind of tennis experience, it is something that is an event that is for everyone, and it will get the names that people will have heard of if they're not as familiar with some of the more sort of the top 50, but they are very familiar with the top 5. So a fantastic tournament. I would recommend not staying very close to where the tournament is. I would stay somewhere like Södermalm or somewhere like that, but nevertheless, it's a tournament that I hope to return to next year. I very much enjoyed it, and yeah, I hope this has been helpful. And until next time, I think the next one will be the Billie Jean King Cup, where we will be giving updates on the daily. And it won't be a tour diary of me as we go. But this was the Stockholm Open. And so if you go next year, you might see me there.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.